This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Bird-friendly coffee might sound like coffee brewed and developed for our feathered friends, but it's really a certification for what is more commonly referred to as shade-grown coffee. It's coffee grown using agroforestry, which encourages more biodiversity, including a variety of trees, small mammals, and, you guessed it, birds.
But the birds who make their homes in coffee fields throughout Central and South America aren't just locals. Many are migratory birds who may winter in coffee fields but spend their summers in the United States.
Dr. Robert Rice is a research scientist with the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. Dr. Rice is actually a geographer, not an ornithologist, which makes his work with the Smithsonian a little unusual.
He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about how he started working with the Migratory Bird Center.
I was offered this job not so much for my knowledge about birds, although I do like birds, but more for looking at land use and doing land use studies related to migratory bird habitat. So that's how we got to working with what we refer to as managed lands, lands that are mostly in agriculture. They also could be, you know, forested lands where people manage forests, but it's mainly agricultural lands, and the principal focus has been coffee, and coffee managed in a what people refer to as agroforestry systems. That is, you have coffee bushes on the land, but then shade trees of various heights covering them, providing shade, and all of that together creates a forest-like setting that we found, if it's managed in certain ways, can provide quite good quality and viable habitat for not just migratory birds, but for resident birds as well. You know, as an agricultural land, there are not many agricultural systems that can make those claims of being both economically active and productive, and also having this environmental or habitat or biodiversity dimension to them. So we found that working in coffee has a lot of possibilities.
And that was sort of my question. Why coffee? How does what I've heard called shade-grown coffee, how does that affect the actual coffee plant?
Well, it helps, I think, to go back and sort of look at coffee evolutionarily. Coffee is a shrub native to what they call the center of origin, is located in what's now Ethiopia and the Sudan, in these mid-elevational, higher-elevation mountainous regions. And it's an understory shrub evolutionarily. So it's sort of been selected to live underneath a natural forest. So when people figured out that coffee could be a crop that could be grown for the beverage we know as coffee, many places actually tried to mimic its initial and historical setting by putting it into these agroforestry systems. For instance, when it was taken out of Africa and brought to the New World, that is the Western Hemisphere, in many places it was just inserted into forested areas. Other instances, it was put into areas that had been in other agricultural systems, so people had to plant shade. But early on in coffee's history, especially in this hemisphere, growers tried to mimic the natural setting of coffee with some kind of shade cover. But in more recent years, especially 30, 40, 50 years ago, when we were all benefits of what people refer to as the Green Revolution, some people thought coffee could be improved, and improved from the standpoint of higher yields, if the shade was taken away and you started to use different varieties, sometimes hybrid varieties, high-yielding varieties, and also using a lot of inputs like agrochemicals, whether it's fertilizers. And, of course, when you open it up to the sun like that, you also have weed problems, so you need to have herbicides to take care of the weeds. Those changes also result in certain diseases that come in, so you need pesticides. So there's a whole sort of host of things that have happened in those areas where coffee has been taken out of the shade and grown in the open sun.
So when they started growing coffee in the sun, were they right? Did they have higher yields?
Oh, yeah. No, it's very different, very striking, the yield differences. You can get to even sort of three times the amount of coffee per unit area if you open it up to the sun and use all these chemical inputs. But you really do have to sort of keep it on what some people would refer to as this life support system of chemical inputs, the fertilizers and the herbicides and pesticides and things. You do get higher yields. But it's also, I think it's a slight, not a misnomer, but it's in order to look at yields, you really need to look at the entire yields that come out of a agroforestry system. So coffee yields might be lower if coffee is grown in the shade, but for a grower, especially these small growers, and most coffee growers are small peasant producers, you have all these other crops coming out, or products coming out. You have firewood, of course, when the shade trees are pruned from time to time. You have construction materials from the trees that can be harvested every so often. You have, of course, fruits. You have citrus fruits. You have bananas. You have avocados. You have mangoes. Depending on what elevation the coffee is grown at, you have all this host of other products. So this array of other products has to be looked at, I think, when we're talking about yields. So you're going to have coffee, and you're going to have less coffee per unit area in a shade system compared to a sun system. But you're going to have all these other things as well. And much of that is very important to local communities and family budgets and, you know, family nutrition and even survival sometimes, especially when you're talking about very small producers of, you know, 1-2 hectares of land. These other products become very, very important, either for their own consumption or for trading or selling locally.
So what percentage of coffee would you say is actually grown in the shade versus in the sun?
Well, that is a very good question, and we've, you know, tried in various ways to figure that out and have actually written papers on it. Right now, I think for Latin America, which is where we mainly work, it may be something on the order of maybe 50 or 60% of the coffee area could be in the shade. But then there's a lot of kind of, I don't want to call it slop, but there's shade and then there's shade, right? In trying to figure out from different organizations or coffee research institutes around the region, they might call a coffee farm with, you know, a very scant number of shade trees in a system, they may call that shade. For us, we would say in order to be a real shade system that is actually protecting the soil and even providing habitat, there needs to be a diversity of trees, and the trees need to be a certain height, and the trees need to have a certain amount of foliage on them throughout the year in order to provide habitat for birds and other wildlife. So it's a hard number to come to, but good shade, probably 30, 40% of the coffee in Latin America has some pretty good shade.
When we're talking about shade systems in general, are coffee farms who have a well-developed shade system, are those the farms that you consider bird-friendly?
Yes. In fact, from research done back in the 90s, we know now that trees of a certain height in a coffee farm, as well as a coffee farm that has a certain number of tree species and a certain way to manage it in terms of pruning and keeping the foliage there, can provide fairly good habitat. And we had studies that were done in coffee farms in Mexico, in Guatemala, and in Peru, where literally, I think, thousands of observations were done in order to determine what are the, what we would call, biophysical characteristics of a coffee farm, which ones are good for creating the habitat for birds. So once we figured that out, then we have created a list of criteria. We have checklists that we've created, and that has been handed over to a number of certification agencies who normally go and do organic certifications. But they now have this shade evaluation checklist that they can use. If a farmer wants to be considered to be, quote, bird-friendly and receive the bird-friendly seal of approval, which goes along with our criteria, then they can be inspected and have their shade evaluated. And if it meets muster with the criteria that we created and they're certified organic, that's the first cut for us, then those farms can be, quote, bird-friendly. And that's all done with third parties, independent, both inspection and certification. We're not involved in that at all, but we did create the criteria, which is based on scientific fieldwork.
So why did you choose the moniker bird-friendly? Because when I initially heard that, you know, I didn't really know what to make of it. I knew that shade-grown coffee was better for the earth, better for the environment in general, but bird-friendly wouldn't be something that sticks out to me as saying that.
Well, yeah, you've hit on something that's very interesting because we've had people say, well, what does that mean, bird-friendly? Does that mean the birds like the coffee and they're eating the coffee? Or other people kind of go the other way and actually do get what we mean by it in terms of habitat. In fact, when I first heard the term, when I first came to work here, my former supervisor told me what he had done in terms of patented and trademarked the term. And to me, I thought, well, that sounds kind of strange. But as we talked about it, and I had worked in coffee quite a bit by then, but as we talked about it, he came at it from this habitat standpoint, started, you know, it made sense to me. So the term actually, it does need explaining, but what it is a shade coffee certification. Now, what's interesting is that bird friendly, that term, has worked very well in other countries. For example, in Japan, bird-friendly coffee is doing very well, and unbeknownst to us, the word friendly actually is a borrowed term from English that is used in Japan. You actually see it written on storefronts sometimes and in different places, the term friendly, for whatever reason. And of course, birds are a symbol of nature and are sort of deeply embedded into the Japanese psyche as such. So the term bird-friendly has actually worked quite well in Japan, and so we were happy with that, and Japan is doing quite well with the bird-friendly coffee.
That's very interesting, because here I don't hear the term used as much. How much of our coffee is bird-friendly certified?
Ooh, very, very little. If we looked at the entire amount in terms of world coffee produced, it's probably doesn't even get to be 1% of the coffee that's actually certified. From my own travels and talking with people, I think a lot more could be certified as bird-friendly, probably anywhere between 5 and 10%, maybe more. But right now, because we're still, you know, struggling with getting the market out there to recognize it as something that is viable and that consumers want, we're researchers, we're not marketers, we're still struggling to increase the demand as much as possible. So I would say a very small amount of the world's coffee is right now certified as bird-friendly. But as I said, I think a lot more could be if demand were to increase.
So if you're someone who is going to, you know, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, are you going to find any of this bird-friendly certified coffee?
You won't find it at Dunkin' Donuts. You won't find it at Starbucks. You won't find it labeled as such. It could be that they are actually buying and serving coffee that has the certification, but it's not going to be labeled as such because we have no agreements with them to use the logo and the term. But you will find it in Whole Foods stores, and you can, of course, find it online, right, and order it that way. But I always suggest to people to get together with other people and order a fairly large order so that you're not buying 1 or 2 pounds and having to pay the shipping on 1 or 2 pounds of coffee. Rather, get people together and buy a big lot of it, and that way you split up the shipping cost. And also, when you order it or talk to your roaster ordering it online, make sure that you have them send it to you like a day after it's roasted. You don't want it to be, you know, sent 2 weeks after it's been roasted.
I think one of the big questions I had in looking at this is part of the research really focuses on migratory birds, who, of course, migrate, as their name might imply. How does shade-grown and bird-friendly certified coffee, how do those affect the birds that come here?
Well, it provides them, when they're in, say, Latin America, whether it's southern Mexico or into Costa Rica or even as, you know, far south as Colombia and Peru, these shade-grown coffee systems oftentimes are some of the last remaining canopy cover that they can find in the areas where they go. Birds do this thing. They have this thing called site fidelity when they go places. And they return to the same place year after year. And there's data from, you know, several studies that show that. And sometimes they return to the same place within 50 meters of where they were the year before. And all this has been done with birds that have been caught and banded so that you can identify an individual bird. And then the next year they've come back to the same place within 50 meters of where they were caught the year before. So if they're coming back to an area where it's been forested for years and there's coffee in the area and they've kind of hung out in the forest and gone to the coffee and used the coffee as a habitat as well, or maybe even the coffee is the habitat they've always used. If that then is cut down and transformed into something else, then they arrive there when they go to their wintering grounds, and all of a sudden their habitat is totally changed. So they're then sort of put in a position of being more open to predation from predators, not having the food resources that they normally have because their habitat has been changed. They're looking around for other places. And so if we can keep these habitats intact, and it seems like to us that this bird-friendly certification helps growers keep it intact because they actually get a premium price for their coffee when they sell it as bird-friendly, then that keeps the shade coffee habitat in place and provides a place for these migratory birds to survive and then be ready to make the trip north again when the time comes. So it's just the maintaining of habitat and their overwintering grounds that can be very important to them.
So if we want a healthier ecosystem, if we want to see more birds in the spring, then it sort of behooves us to invest in this bird-friendly coffee.
I would certainly agree with that, and also tell your friends about it. And the thing is, I think our challenge right now is to increase demand for this coffee. And I think the best way that happens is for consumers themselves to insist on their coffee providers to find it. So if you have a local roaster that you like that is not carrying a bird-friendly coffee, then talk to them about it, and they can go online and find it, find the farms that produce it on our website. It's that kind of thing, I think, that's going to really start sort of working its way up the chain there for stores to start sourcing it more.
Dr. Robert Rice is a geographer and research scientist with the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center. It's located at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. His work is on the intersection of agriculture and environmental change with a special focus on migratory birds and coffee production.
We spoke with Dr. Rice as part of our ongoing series on coffee in Milwaukee. You can hear all of the segments on coffee at WUWM.com.
Coming up next, we get to the bottom and the top of the restoration of Milwaukee's St. Josephat Basilica. Lake Effect returns with that story on WUWM right after this.